This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Kusi Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And we've actually got a poll running on Twitter right now. Should professional football matches restart? And we've got about 100 votes in with leading the way, 43% with yes, with SOPs. And I say yes to this as well. Chuang, do you empathize with my situation?
Well, I don't like to say this, but Liverpool should be crowned champions, and they should have the right thing done by them. So yes, with SOPs, SOPs.
What about you, Noel?
I'll just, I don't watch football to begin with. But if I have to watch, I think I'll just watch it online. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about going to the stadium. I think none of us actually do that. But I can't wait to watch it on my TV again. But as usual, at 8 a.m. every day, we've got the Breakfast Grill every weekday anyway. Noelle, what's happening today?
So we're going to be speaking with Stephanie Sid. She's the CEO of Inmagine Group, which she founded with her husband, Andy. I think when she first started working, she was working as an intern for him. Anyway, they grew the business together and they are the fourth largest stock image repository in the world. Now, I have to repeat this again, right? It's the fourth largest in the world. And how many Malaysian companies, homegrown companies, you know, that, you know, can count themselves in top five in something, right? Apart from rubber gloves. So anyway, the company is called 123RF, that stock image company, and they come after Getty Images and Shutterstock. But anyway, Inmagine has been going on an acquisition trail, right? They don't just want to be a homegrown company, so they have offices now across the world. And so I think the question I really ask her is, do they want to become the Adobe of the East? You know, are they modeling their business after Adobe?
That's a very interesting goal to achieve. That would be very, that would be something to really, I don't know what to say here, but the word eludes me right now. Oh, that would be great to see, actually. It would be fantastic to see a Malaysian company hit that kind of thing. And it's funny that we don't talk about a company like Imagine more often when we so easily can repeat things like Top Glove and Carex in our work anyway. But let's move over to Indonesia. Amidst the Idul Fitri celebrations, Indonesia, the home to the world's largest Muslim population, has deployed hundreds of thousands of army and police personnel across the vast country to enforce social and physical distancing rules. The announcement came after a record surge in infections in the past week that cast doubt about plans to reopen Southeast Asia's largest economy.
I think they have no choice, right? Almost 350,000 officers will guard public transport, shopping malls and tourism sites in four provinces and 25 cities, including, of course, Jakarta, which is the most dense city in Indonesia. And looking at the number of cases that they have had, I think the total has reached 22,000. And of this, 165 as of yesterday. And the death toll so far are passing 1,400. Now, bear in mind, these are cases they know, right? There may be many, many more cases out there.
Right. And for more on this situation, we speak to Alden Iswanto, an independent political analyst based in Jakarta. Alden, are you there on the line with us?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Alden. Thank you so much for your time this morning. How has Indonesia or how have Indonesians taken to the restrictions during the celebrations?
So for most Indonesians, mudik is a cultural identity that has spanned for decades, right? And as such, we should know that it will be difficult to change this in a span of a few months. So although public transport saw a significant drop in numbers of passengers, people are still like adamant to mudik. And despite travel restrictions and checkpoints in place, like more than around 74,000 cars trying to pass Jakarta were forced to turn back by authorities. And police had also stopped and fined hundreds of illegal travel agents. They were still willing to take passengers. But the problem is more than just cultural. With employability prospects plummeting, especially in the informal sector, most people from outside of Jakarta who came to the capital for work has no choice but to come back to their hometown. And these people have lost their jobs, means to support life in Jakarta. Some are forced to be homeless as they are unable to pay rent. And alarmingly, the lack of social net and aid by the government has made this year's mudik, for some, a fight for survival.
What do you hope to see the government doing more?
Well, there are measures in place through the large-scale social restrictions. Gatherings are limited, public transport also limited. But enforcement is a big issue. You know, just days before the Hari Raya, well, there were reports of people still flocking markets, many not wearing any masks, despite this being a very critical period, right? And it also didn't help that the government was considered to be slow and indecisive in imposing travel restrictions to curb mudik. And there's just been confusing from direction from one ministry that would conflict with another. So overall, their poor communication strategy and lack of strict measures have, in a way, allowed people to lose interest in this battle against the coronavirus.
Yeah, but obviously surveys have shown, I think 54% of Indonesians believe that Jokowi's handling of the pandemic has been less than satisfactory. But it's also very difficult to contain the virus, as you mentioned. Is the president caught between a rock and a hard place in terms of trying to contain the pandemic here?
Definitely. I mean, when facing this pandemic, there's no best practice, right? Every country is struggling to contain it. But it's just that when it comes to the government, you would expect them to take a firm and a very confident approach. You cannot be wishy-washy. And your ministries cannot conflict with each other and send mixed signals. Like, for example, even when announcing the ban on mudik or restriction in mudik, they were taking so long, and it has confused people. And just a few days ago, Indonesia recorded its highest new daily cases, which means that the current measures are not enough to curb the infection. Yeah, and its enforcement is difficult when a large portion of your economic activity comes from the informal sector, right? And for Indonesia, it accounts for some 60% of the workforce. You might be able to close malls and force restaurants, but you can't really oversee the small alleyways, warungs, and markets. And this is why public awareness and support is critical. They can fill the gap where authorities can't.
So, Eldon, do we have any idea how the healthcare system in Indonesia is coping with the current caseload?
They're definitely struggling. You know, the main long-standing problem with Indonesia's healthcare system is its disparity. You know, despite having the same response protocols, regional governments have varied resources capacities. Even though Greater Jakarta enjoys a significant number of medical personnel and equipment, smaller cities are often left with inadequate medical personnel, which now faces possible surging infections due to the mudik. And the country also are lacking pulmonologist specialists. They only have, I think, one for every 1.2 million Indonesians. So this is like a very worrying situation. And what this epidemic has shown is that it has truly stressed the limit of Indonesia's healthcare system. And if they don't make any adjustments soon, then they can't really prepare themselves for any future problems such as this COVID-19.
The situation does sound dire in Indonesia, but what sort of measures might have been effective in helping the people so far?
Well, in terms of regulatory approach, right, the government seemed to be reacting quite promptly. They've allowed or lifted a legislated 3% cap on the annual budget deficit to 5% until 2022. This will allow more government spending, including stimulus packages, safety nets, tax breaks for businesses, and discounts for utility bills. So this might have helped companies and the middle income group to stay afloat, but they have so far failed to provide direct assistance to the most vulnerable. You know, distribution of aid hasn't really reached all. A central and provincial government debate on the responsibilities, homelessness, their increase have yet to be addressed. But it's understandable that pressure to jumpstart the economy is mounting, as it's becoming clear that the government is struggling to dampen the economic effect.
Why is aid distribution so slow?
Well, it's because of lack of coordination between central and provincial government. They seem to be conflicting on who is responsible for whom. And especially in the case of Jakarta, where a lot of the citizens are undocumented, it's very difficult to list and to send this aid. And this is why actually grassroots efforts should play a role as well. Communities helping, providing data for local government to act. Yeah. But so far, their response from the government has been very lacking.
And what about the proposed new capital in East Kalimantan? Has that plan been effectively derailed given the current situation?
Well, from the start, it has always been an ambitious plan and full of criticism. And despite the current challenges posed by COVID-19, it appears that they are still set on continuing the progress. Just in March, they just listed a project to create the new capital's master plan worth something around 5.8 million. Well, the initial plan for the national budget to contribute only 20% and the rest covered by PPPs and private initiatives. And foreign funds were expected to contribute massively. But with this in the background, will they still have the appetite for this? But I guess for President Jokowi, it's too late to stop it, right? Because this was supposed to be his crowning achievement. But this is also a race against time because the legal framework of the capital has not yet been penned by the parliament. So in theory, if he doesn't achieve significant progress before his end of tenure, then it's possible that the next president can scrape the plan altogether.
All right, Eldon, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Eldon Iswanto, an independent political analyst based in Jakarta. And really, I think the fragmented nature of Indonesia's one geography is a big inhibitor to its ability to cope with all of this, and hence having to bring out the basically the army and the police to help handle the situation.
Well, 24,000 cases, about 1,400 deaths, that's official. I've got friends in Jakarta who I talk to quite regularly, and he just says to me, you can add two zeros on the back of those numbers.
Right, and on that note, we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, we'll be talking football. Should we restart it with Kieran Maguire, football financial analyst, football financial analyst. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.